Hi, everybody. My name is Corey Raven. Welcome to Crosstalk Podcast. And I want to welcome Irene. Welcome to Crosstalk.
Thank you.
And today we have an amazing guest, a music star, a vocal recording artist, somebody who I respect greatly, and somebody who's actually a recipient of a scholarship from the Karen Treatment Center, the Neil Lasher Music Fund. The Neil Lasher Music Fund does amazing things to help people in the music business, people that are inside, on stage, backstage, roadies, family members, anybody who can use help, who needs help to try to find a better way of life. The Neil Lasher Fund is there. So go to Karen.org and take a look at all the good things that the Neil Lasher Music Fund is doing. And the product of that hard work of the foundation is a wonderful human being. He's with us today. Say hello to Duran.
Hello. What's going on, everybody?
Duranzilla.
Happy to be here.
Duranzilla.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you so much, Corey.
So you've never done a podcast before?
First one. I'm a little nervous, but I'm stoked, actually. Yeah.
This is what they call the Virgin Edition.
Yeah, I'll take it. Shirley Temple.
Yeah, definitely.
We are very excited to have you and hear, you know, all about Duran.
Yeah, buckle up for real. I mean, I'm an open book, so whatever you guys want to get into, let's do it.
Tell us a little bit about how you started the life on this earth.
Okay. Well, yeah, so my parents, my mom was an immigrant. Her whole family is from Spain. And my grandpa, Ricardo, he wanted to provide them a better life. So he moved out to Uruguay. That's where my mom was born, my aunt. And then just kind of like bluegrass, like, you know, grassroots stuff, immigrated to the States, found a foster family, and went from Chicago International, like not speaking a lick of English, figured out how to get set up out there in Lincoln, Nebraska. And my mom was the first to learn English. That's why I don't know any Spanish. It's like, un poquito. You know? Yeah. Por favor. So, yeah. I don't know. My dad was out there in Omaha. He was just a troublemaker. And heart of gold, though. And then started playing in bands. He was a drummer. He had, like, the freaking one earring and the blue eyeshadow. And he was in a band called the Soul Grinders. And they opened up for the Violent Femmes. It was kind of like their big... you know, big thing. And that's where he met my mom. And then they went out to San Francisco to chase a dream. I believe it was like 89 or 90. And man, I mean, they have a lot of stories from that time. Like, they were living in the Tenderloin. So it was just like walking over needles. And my dad, like, he has this story where he like pulled up to a Doc Martens store barefoot and like bought a pair of Doc Martens that he still has today. And like things like that, you know, stepping over needles and all that jazz. Now, I was born in 95, and they decided to get out of the city, moved to San Mateo, where my little brother was born. My dad got into carpet cleaning around that time and learned a lot of tricks there, but then moved out to Cape Coral, Florida. That's where, like, a lot of the fam had moved. They were in Fort Myers, and Cape Coral was more of, like, a suburban town north of there. And then just across the way was, like, Pine Island, which had a bit of, like, a party scene.
How old were you when they moved to Florida?
I think I was 4 or 5. So that was like all I knew. It was like, that's like where I learned about the world, was like Cape Coral, Florida. Yeah, man. And to kind of like fast forward through all that, I started skateboarding. I like was hanging out with trouble. Actually, it's funny. I got into a lot more trouble in the private schools than I did in the public schools. Mm-hmm. And my mom put me in those like little, you know, charter schools to like prevent that. So because of that, I went to this school called Trafalgar where I met this kid, Cameron Hafner. And that's really where it all began, man. This kid Cameron, and Cameron's actually the one who drove me to rehab, I'll get into that later, but it's a wild tale.
So you met Cameron at what age?
12. I was 12.
Isn't that cool, though, to walk through life with someone and have them be the person in one of the most pivotal moments?
Ride or die.
Yeah.
I catch a bullet for him, for sure.
So did you call him and tell him, I need to go to rehab, would you give me a ride?
I'll give you the story. It's kind of a long lead up to it, though.
All right, well, lead up any way you like.
All right. Yeah, man. So his dad was a producer who knew a guy who knew a guy that was looking for a singer my age. They're up, you know, at the same time in Connecticut, there was this kid, Ben Spermuli, who's also like my dear friend to this day. We text every day and FaceTime. And he's been in every band I've ever been in. And just, you know, we make magic together. So, Ben was this shredder guitar player guy. He was like 11, who played guitar like Eddie Van Halen. And he was like melting faces at this little cafe in Fairfield, Connecticut. And the owner of the place was my connect, basically. He knew this guy, Doug, who was a prodigy guitar player in the 70s, who knew this guy, Mark. And Doug was it's a long story. But so through that, there was this guy, Mike Mangini, who was coming in to get his coffee every day at Chess Table. And he was a big producer. He's like, you know, put together the Jonas Brothers and, you know, Who Let the Dogs Out and all that. You know, he's got a whole track record. And so Rich was trying to get him involved with this project. He was like, you got to like work with this kid, Ben. He's like really good. Like, you got to see him. And I was like, all right, I'll check it out. And he sees it and he's like, all right, he's good, but you got to get a kid his own age. And that's where I kind of came into the fold. And, you know, around that time, my dad got into some financial trouble and there was really nothing holding us back. There's nothing to lose. So I dropped out of middle school and got on a fucking plane out to, you know, LaGuardia. And around that same time, we, you know, Caitlin Kalfas came into the picture. She's this incredible drummer she won the record for world's fastest female drummer. And her sister, Carly, joined the band as well. She was just a great package. And we had a good 3-year run. We basically started small. We were doing shows at middle schools and just little venues here and there.
Were your mom and dad, were they with you when you were doing
this? Not for the first like 6 months. Then my dad eventually moved up, but my mom was still down in Cape Coral. It was a little bit of an Oliver Twist kind of tale, but I had a lot of people around me, so I don't really, there's no like, woe is me.
Were you nervous at all to kind of pick up
and go? I was stoked. I mean, the fear didn't really kick in until the band broke up, you know?
So at this time, were you doing any sort of drinking or drugs or anything?
No.
Like
the whole ride clean of Kicking Daisies, I was straight edge and very proud of it.
Okay.
Until the band broke up. And then I was like, you know,
F it.
17, on my 17th birthday, I had weed for the first time and I was just in love. And that's all I fucking cared about. It was like the whole summer. And we put together this other band. It was still me and Ben, but these two guys from New Jersey. And we eventually changed the name. And that's when I got into like hardcore, not really hardcore. It wasn't like meth and heroin, but, you know, Xanax and Molly and fucking, we tried morphine once and we were doing, like a lot
pretty
of
pretty hardcore.
But it wasn't like, you know, shooting fucking whatever.
So it was really like you were at a high with Kicking Daisies. And then when that split, why did it split up?
Well, the infrastructure just wasn't, you know, we were getting older. People wanted to have some stability. And there was a lot of like fighting going on. And then me and Carly, you know, she was kind of like my first girlfriend. And it just created a rift in the band in a lot of ways. Like it was very Fleetwood Mac and peace and love. Like, you know, we're all good now. But it's just, it was a very stressful kind of thing. And you know, there was just a lot going on, man. People wanted to like, they just wanted some security. I think that's what it was. And there's a lot of uncertainty.
So from this point forward, we're at the 17-ish age.
Yeah,
you're 29 now. You're about to turn 30.
Yeah.
Okay, so for the next several minutes.
For brevity, yeah.
No, there's no reason to be brief.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm never brief, right?
No.
So tell us a little bit of the band breaks up.
Yeah.
And what does your life look like? Are you going off the rails using?
Not yet, man. It was still a party, like, because we still had this band, this other band. It was called The Silent Scene. And it was sort of like, you know, we got with Sam Hollander, who sort of helped us, corralled us into what the next move would be. And so at first it was like boy band, One Direction type shit. And we were doing, you know, we were still playing shows and doing covers, and the party was still going on. I wasn't drinking yet, but I was like, you know, a lot of weed and like a lot of
pills.
It was more so weed than the pills, but yeah, for sure we would dabble with that. But it was just like Stoner City, you know. We were just and it was fun. We had a blast, man. We were doing like, I mean, it was really like kind of the American dream. We were just, the parties were awesome. That was like some of the best times.
Well, nobody starts off because it stinks.
Yeah.
The beginning is fun. I mean, that's why we always have to remember the end and not the beginning, right?
And so my first, you know, this is kind of my, I've told this in like qualifications before, but so my first drink was at the Poconos, you know, Camelback Mountain. All the folks went away to go gamble in the city, and it was just like the kids hanging out in this lodge, and everybody started drinking. And like I told you guys before, it was like I had done Molly and pills and weed and stuff before I ever drank. I was always afraid of alcohol because what I'd seen with my parents, and you know, everybody was drinking and I felt left out. I was like, do you think it's like, is this okay, like whatever? And Ben was like, yeah, you'll be fine, man. And Richie, the singer, was like, yeah, you know, have a little fruit punch, like vodka fruit punch, you'll be all right. And so I did. That was my first drink ever, and it was incredible. Like, and then everybody wanted to go fucking snowboarding on the mountain, and one of the guys there worked there, so he was able to turn off on the ski lifts and all the lights and everything.
That's pretty cool.
And so we pulled up, man. We had like a flask of Fireball, and we were drinking on the ski lift, and I was faded, like, and I joke like it was all downhill from there, you know. And it kind of was, you know, I look back on that very fondly. Like, I don't think about the bad times, but there was definitely like a memory of me like on New Year's Eve fucking shotgunning a Coors Light behind the shed because I was alone, and there was definitely some dark shit going on. And then the band broke up. And
do you think that I always talk about, for me, you know, at some point I crossed an invisible line, and now I can look back and see that invisible line, but at the time I couldn't. Do you think this was kind of that
situation? Oh, no, that hit me in my like mid-20s, you know? So, mm-hmm. I mean, it was still like I was having dark times, but I was still like
mostly good.
Kind of carried through it because of the music and just whatever. I don't know. I just didn't really see it. Like, and then band breaks up. I was kind of like just roaming around in Fairfield. It just didn't belong there. A lot of stuff happened there. And I just got out. My aunt posted me up in Oakland. And I just flew out. And on my way there, I DM'd Sam Hollander. And I was like, hey, man, I'm coming out to the West Coast. And he's like, let's go. I'll mentor you and da 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 da. Because he had moved out to LA. And so that kind of, it was a fork in the road moment for me. Because like, now here I am in the region where I was born. I'd never actually spent any time in the Bay Area. So I'm like, I can't really claim it, but it was cool. Cause that was like my first time getting to see what the Bay is actually like. So I was living in Oakland and skating around and trying to buy weed from, you know, these thugs on the street. I don't want to say that, but gangsters, you know what I mean? People that I should not have been hanging around with late at night. But it was fun time, man. I had a great fucking time in the Bay. And I was like flirting with the idea of going to college. And
did you graduate high school?
So what happened was I went to this summer school. I don't even know if I should say this. Whatever, it doesn't matter. yeah, I went to the summer school thing to go to Academy of Art. And they put me through this thing called Penn Foster, which, you know, was sort of, I got a diploma. So it's basically a GED, but, so yeah.
So on for paper, all intents and purposes, you
graduated. Yeah, because I tried doing like the homeschool thing with Kicking Daisies, but we were never like very like on our game with the curriculum. So, but anyway, so I basically just dropped out of college to come to LA and work with Sam. Like, and I kind of beat myself up about that from time to time, but it's like, I'd be a fool not to.
Yeah.
And I had been taking trips to LA to like show him like all these songs. I had like 500 songs and this Trapper Keeper of like, you know, lyrics.
Songs that you wrote?
Yeah. And it was a fun fucking time, you know, but like.
I picture like the start of a race when they shoot the gun.
Bro.
And then.
I mean, it was so much fun too, because we were doing like all these like big production like songs, and there was like music videos, and we were playing shows. We had management. Like Sam hooked me up with like this top tier management at this Soho house. Like we like. it was the craziest time of my life. And I literally was like, oh, we fucking made
it. Hookup.
Pretty much, yeah. I owe Sam a lot for like doing that for me in my early 20s. And I thought that I would know the level of like what it was, but I still kind of like took it for granted. I mean, it was just too easy. And it moved so fast, you know. I got signed in 2 years pretty much, like from moving to LA, and we were like doing these tours and like, you know, theaters and fucking like all this crazy stuff, and it was a blast, but I was like sinking deep into my addiction. Like I was, you know, and I was pretty good at hiding it for a long time. Like it got really bad in Vegas when I moved out there, because I basically got signed, met a girl in San Francisco, and then moved out to Vegas. And
she moved with you?
Yeah. It was, she did, shout out Lily Trejo, man. And we're friends now. Her and I are like, we had like a meme off the other day. So like we're on a good terms, but things got like, you know, it just got crazy out there in the desert. And I had this like, this is the first time getting signed. They gave me all this free money, and I just freaking, you know, the party was on. And
what does free money mean?
It's not real. Because like they had, you know,
gave you advances.
It was an advance.
Man. Oh, advance.
It's an investment. It's not really, it's not free money. So
with the money, were you primarily doing drugs, buying alcohol?
Alcohol, yeah. For sure. It was weed and alcohol. Gambling? I was never gambling, for sure. I mean, if anything, it was like a little bit here and there with roulette table. Was like super small stakes.
Just with his life.
100%, yeah. Which that's what music is anyways. It's, you know, high stakes gambling. But yeah, man, I just got into a lot of trouble, some legal troubles here and there. And I was able to like kind of wash my hands of it. But like I took some fucking major hits in Vegas, and I got the fuck out. Pandemic happened. 23. And then 24, I moved back out to LA. By the grace of God, I got the fuck out of Vegas. And yeah, I was playing guitar for about 5 different bands, and I was like kind of clawing my way back, but I was, you know, I was still an awful alcoholic. And like, I'll just kind of like fast forward through there so we can kind of get to where I'm at now. Like I broke my foot in a rehearsal session and had to move back out to Vegas. Everything kind of came to a halt, and the spiral really took place. And by the end of 2022, I was like just drunk texting everybody. And
did you get into opiates and stuff?
No, I never broke it. Thank God. Yeah.
Thank God is right.
Yeah. For some reason, like if I ever did like anything, you know, I never tried heroin. I never tried meth, but I tried plenty of coke and plenty of Molly, ecstasy.
Well, at this point, everything is laced with fentanyl.
Yeah. And like I have a lot of homies who I've heard. So I knew what I was like as an addict. So I just was like, I can never handle it. If I ever go near that, like that'll take me out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I was just alcohol. It was bad enough as is. Just the bridges that I burned, like, it was crazy. The things I was saying, and then come to in the morning and just be like, the reckoning, the sickening.
those moments where you think back on the night before and you're like cringing.
Oh, it's awful. It's horrific. And then I'm like trying to like, you know, I would try to make amends, but people were just like, we appreciate that, but it's going to take a lot more than
blackouts.
Whew, like you wouldn't believe, man. And like, stories were like I had no business being behind the wheel of a car, and like fuck, man. So I've only got one DUI. I got it reduced to a wet reckless, but still, I mean, I was like speeding going from LA to Vegas, singing along to Drain You by Nirvana top of my lungs fucking behind this car, and like I merged over. I was trying to go in front of them, and they merge in front of me. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm gonna merge back. And then they do the same thing. Oh, so I go three lanes over, boom, it's a fucking cop. And you know, that kind of thing. Shout out Charlie Lopresti for getting me out of that one. But because I blew under the legal limit by the time I got to the station. So they let me off the hook. But they had to have a friend had to come pick me up. So like 2023 was honestly the year you know, my real rock bottom, because I like.
And are you performing still?
No, okay. I was like, I was bloated. I was like, this is the year of the flask. This is what I call it, the year of the flask, you know, because, you know, I was like, if I couldn't afford it, I would shoplift it. And I had a pretty good method of doing that. Even in the fucking summertime, I would these denim jackets, you know, and just the plastic New Amsterdam bottles and just, but for the most part, I would pay for it if I could. And all of my fucking money just went towards gas, girlfriend, alcohol. And it was like, I just was suppressing everything way deep down. And I wasn't able to face what I was doing with my potential and with my life and with my, yeah, you know, all these people who had invested their time and their lives into my fucking music career.
And, you just said, I want to just dig a little bit. Mm-hmm. You just said I was suppressing a lot of stuff.
So I'll get to what happened. Yeah.
What are you suppressing?
So.
Isn't it true?
I basically like, I met this girl and I was obsessed with her, bro. She was like this, she was just like poison for me. It was like fucking heroin. And she was the wrong person for me, like incredibly toxic, like had her own bag of issues to unpack and whatever. But like, she was my best friend. I was very, very like vulnerable with her, which, you know, whatever, say what you want about it. But she was my only friend in that fucking desert. And, you know, but it was a very cinematic summer. And she wanted to go see this festival. And I didn't really want to go. I'd already seen a lot of those bands. But I went. She was like, I'm going to be so mad at you. She's, you know, Latina. So we freaking, all right. So my buddy Cameron, he won these tickets to Louder Than Life. We went all 4 days. And I didn't want to pay for alcohol. So I bought these like plastic flasks. And I would pour the whatever, you know, the Smirnoff in there and smuggle it in. And that's how I learned the trick. And so for Darker Waves, November 18th, I believe, 2023, I smuggle in a bottle full of vodka and I basically keep it all to myself. And I had maybe 15 shots of vodka, $100 on tall boys, two mushroom chocolates, a tab and a half of acid, three weed edibles, and smoked a joint. And by the, and dude, it was like,
sounds like a partridge in a pear tree.
Oh my God, dude. It was.
It sounds like my whole 2016.
Oh my Lord. So it was like Echo and the Bunnymen, Devo, B-52s, Blondie.
Oh fucking, my God, what a good lineup.
You know, and then New Order and Tears for Fears headlining. And it was just like, by the time New Order came on, I was afraid. By the time we walked across the beach to get to Tears for Fears, I was melting, full-blown ego death. Like, just being squashed by this merciless god. Like, it was horrific.
Sounds like ayahuasca.
And I was so terrified and so cruel to myself, like these realizations I was having about my own life and my career and what I was doing to myself in the desert and like the insecurities that I had been suppressing for so long. And like, you know, with this girl who kind of like acted like she was single on Instagram and like, I just, and what I was doing with my time, like with these dead end jobs and like, and granted I was making cool fucking music. Like I was writing like very worthwhile, like compositions and like production that I'm still very proud of and still working on to this day. But like lyrically I was useless. I wasn't, had nothing to say that was like, except for like very esoteric poetry that was like pretty cool. So, I mean, that ended with like me crying in her lap and on the sidewalk of the Airbnb, and then the next night getting into a fight with a dude in front of the Brickyard in North Hollywood, and it was just a very quiet car ride back to North Hollywood or to Vegas, and I just.
How did you feel when this? You're going back to Vegas?
Bro. It was like. I didn't know what I was feeling because I just kept the drinking going. I kept the cycle running along because I didn't want to feel it. But that didn't work because now I had these deep, this deep insight on what was happening to me. And it just made me double down on the alcohol.
It doesn't work anymore.
And bro,
right?
it was like the day drinking got even worse. I would wake up and take fucking four shots instead of like one or two. Mm-hmm. And I was like working at, you know, Press Juicery or Williams Sonoma on my little day jobs. And there was a Lee's Liquor in between. So I'd be able to like go hit this fucking liquor store on my lunch break. And
what realization did you have about what your life had become?
Well, I wanted to kill myself. I didn't want to deal with it. I wanted to fucking duct tape a pipe to my like exhaust and like do it like that, you know, or like figure out how to get a gun and go into the desert or like.
So this is something. After the ego death.
Yeah, it was horrific. And somewhere along that line, she was like, I think we should talk in person. I like kind of spiraled out on text and like, she just was like, I can't, this is too much. This is not the guy that I first met. And like, you know, I couldn't really see clearly. And she like did me a favor by like, it was, there was already a lot of like public humiliation going on with like me going on live on Instagram.
Oh,
like, the phone calls that I was making to my friend. I know. It was, I'm like, you know what's funny too?
Deeply
like,
cringing.
It's brutal. And like one of my buddies from Cape Coral, like from my hometown, was like, you know, I was saying way too much on Instagram. And he was like, pick up the guitar, dummy. And it made me laugh. And so, anyways, long story short, like Cameron, Cameron Hafner, my best friend from Cape Coral, whose dad helped me get into the industry and whatever, he had been taking trips out to Vegas. Like he's in the film industry. And so he's got an office out there in LA and would just take these trips to LA and come out to Vegas to see me. That's like where his parents met. And he was very concerned about like my descent, because it was like, it was so apparent, like not just in my face, but like in the texts and in my like my social media presence and like just the music I was writing and whatever. And
what did he do?
Well, first it was the trips out to see me and trying to pull me out there, but then it was like, all right, I have an opportunity for you to come out to New York. Like, get a plane ticket. Get a fucking plane ticket. Pack your bag. Sell your shit. Sell your car. Don't even worry about it. Get the fuck out of the desert. Because the 24/7, the party's over. The party's over, bro.
All right, go home.
Yeah. You know, and that's where I got my start, was in New York. And like, I have a lot of roots there and whatever. So that's what I did. I didn't think twice about it. Like, at least he did me a solid by breaking my fucking heart on like full display. And it was savage, bro. It was an emotional bloodbath. And I wasn't handling it like myself, you know? And if ever there comes a time, I would love to make amends to her about some of the shit that I said to her. But it was a two-way street. Like, she was pretty, pretty brutal with me as well. So, but it, you know, whatever, I'm over it now. And, but I am very grateful to her and Vegas for like putting me in my place. And because man, I went out to New York in Brooklyn. I was just like falling apart on this flat in Park Slope. And everywhere you go, there you are. I was like, you know, I had these bottom shelf vodkas. Like, it's double the price out there in New York. So I would be drinking these like the Popov or Alexi or whatever.
It sounds like bottles. Your geographical change, you know, did not work.
Well, I was like hoping I'd be able to get the New Amsterdam and the Smirnoff, but it was like, you know, $10 more. So I just went for the, you know, the rubbing alcohol basically. Ooh. And it was like when I ran out of that, I started kind of stealing shit that didn't belong to me. And and that's when Cameron was like, all right, come to Jesus moment. Like, what are we going to do? And I finally took Sam Hollander's advice and reached out to Music Cares, and you know, they were like, send us your bank statements, send us some contracts, let's figure out what your story is. And thank God for Carrie Salas and Music Cares for getting me set up with Karen. And I basically like quit my job. I was just bussing tables at a pool hall, you know. And
how long were you in treatment for?
Cameron drove me out 3 hours from New York in the middle of the night to Warnersville, Pennsylvania on February 4th. And I got out on, I think I was there for 36 days. I had been suppressing so much for so long, like, that I just didn't know what I was going to feel or what it was. And I just experienced the whole spectrum of the human condition. Like, post-rehab, your chances are still pretty slim of, like, having... You know, it's just not very tangible still, like having it stick. And I'm sure if you have a good circle and you're really driven, that's not the case. Like, it'll still, the message will be, and, you know, will stick with you for sure. And a lot of my homies from rehab did great after, you know. We have a group chat of like 25 of us, and we all check in on each other. And so a lot of them did great. But for me, I was like, I had so much free will that I just wasn't exercising the right way of like being able to just get alcohol whenever I wanted. And like, nobody was going to tell me no. And
so after rehab, you drank?
No. I was like very on about it. I went straight from Karen to, I think it was Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where Ned Van Zandt picked me up, and we went straight to Transcend. And I mean, he just showed me the ropes. He was my liaison to New York City. And
is that a halfway house, Transcend?
Pretty much, yeah. So okay. I live in. And shout out to all those guys there. I don't know if they want their names being mentioned or not, but fuck, man. Like, Ned did a lot for me. You know, Ned
Transcend. That's awesome.
Ned and Vix and Matt and all those guys, man. Like, they showed me what it's like to go to a meeting and like work this. And I really tried working the steps, but the sponsor had there. We didn't click. And so I found another sponsor. By that time I kind of ran out of time in New York. So now I got a sponsor out here in LA, and he's heard my whole life story. And so we've been like, you know, going through like Bill's story and all that stuff.
So if you had the opportunity to speak to young Duran, and you were going to give young Duran some advice, knowing what you now know,
yeah,
what you've gone through, what kind of advice would you give him? And, you know, pick an age.
If I was to try and go back in there and kind of save the day, I would probably be like, hey man, don't talk to this girl, or like, you know, be like, steer clear of like that, you know, just stay home this one night, or you know. But for the most part, I had like a really good, I got really lucky. I had a lot of good fortune. And I think that kind of ran out somewhere along the line. If you want to look at it like that, or maybe it was all meant to be. Like, maybe I was meant to be a fucking alcoholic, you know, drug addict.
I was. You know. Well, thank you so much. And thank you all for watching.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
No, you're amazing, and
we do what we can. We all have our moments.
All right. Well, thank you all for watching, and don't forget, if you enjoyed it, to support us by subscribing and share it. Share it with your friends, and if you or someone you know needs help, reach out to us. We want to be there for you, and you know, we mean that. So thank you for plugging in.
Thanks for watching, and thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Crosstalk Podcast.
Can you mean it when I say I gotta change? 'Cause I don't got anything. With you, see it, it's as clear as can be. The North Star, the city. Life for me. I've been falling, I've been dancing. I wanna feel alive, I wanna feel alive. To be by your side, to be by your side. What a wicked life, what a wicked life. But only everything is fine. To be by your side, to be by your side. By us.